Joel Skousen's World Affairs Brief, October 13th, 2017. Commentary and Insights on a Troubled World. This week's analysis, latest update on Las Vegas mass shooting. Russians again accuse U.S. of pretending to fight ISIS. Trump releases new immigration policy. California demands federal aid for wildfires, blames global warming. Trump's war with establishment Republicans. Boy Scouts to admit girls. Brexit deadlocked with EU over monetary payoff. Preparedness tip, how to stop procrastinating, part 1. Item 1. Latest updates on Las Vegas mass shooting. The official narrative continues to unravel and public skepticism increase as police announced this week that there was evidence Stephen Paddock wasn't alone in his room and that the Mandalay Bay security guard was shot outside Paddock's room and radioed for help with precise location of the suspect before the shooting spree began, not afterward. This is crucial information because police say they weren't called by the hotel personnel until at least 6 minutes later, after the massacre had begun, and that the call was swallowed up in the mayhem of the moment. Besides the inexcusable delay by police and SWAT teams in breaching Paddock's room, video witness testimony continues to emerge that there were other shootings, including at the Bellagio, Caesar's Palace, the Tropicana Casino, and the area outside of New York, New York, or the Excalibur hotels. Strangely, the media is in total collusion and denial that there were any other shootings besides the mass shooting at the Route 91 festival, where at least three shooters were involved. We also found out this week that the FBI had confiscated all the electronic media, including cell phones and laptops of workers at the Route 91 festival after the shooting. And when they were returned later this week, all of their photos, videos, and recordings of the shooting had been wiped clean, an obvious and futile attempt by the FBI to limit the amount of private evidence that contradicts the official story. Infowars.com had the story. Quote, workers at the Route 91 festival, during which Stephen Paddock unleashed his massacre, have reportedly been given back their phones and laptops by the FBI, only to discover that all messages and videos from the night of the attack have been wiped clean. According to a Las Vegas resident who posted a status update on Facebook, quote, a bunch of people that worked in the Route 91 said they got their cell phones back today. They all said that all their phones are completely wiped clean. All messages and info from that weekend are completely gone. Anyone else experience this? End quote. Later in the thread, a Route 91 worker confirms the story, commenting, quote, of course, it's an active federal crime scene. They can wipe it clean. I was the beverage manager for the entire event. My laptop is wiped clean. End quote. End of the InfoWars quote. Joel inserts, what does he mean they can wipe it clean because this is a federal crime scene? There is no legal requirement that the FBI can destroy evidence like this, just the opposite. They are not allowed to destroy evidence. They will say perhaps that they still have the evidence, but this is a clear attempt to make sure private evidence is destroyed, so it limits the public's ability to contradict FBI claims. Continuing the InfoWars quote, as Ann Coulter notes, the media's treatment of the story and the constantly changing official narrative is only serving to make people more suspicious. I don't know what happened, and apparently neither do the cops, but it's kind of odd that we keep being told things that aren't true about the Las Vegas massacre, from the basic timeline to this weird insistence that Paddock made a good living at gambling, writes Coulter. Joel says, the media says Paddock's 2015 tax return shows a $5 million income that year, mostly from gambling, which is preposterous. Paddock had high roller accounts at every major casino in Vegas and received thousands of dollars in complimentary rooms, food, and drinks every month, i.e. comps. Casinos don't give these kinds of perks to people who win regularly against them, using mathematical bets or card formulas to win. They only give comps to high roller gamblers who regularly play and lose lots of money to casinos. In fact, they ban gamblers who show they have a system for winning regularly. A $5 million taxable income return indicates, I believe, that Paddock had other big income that doesn't show up as real estate income, perhaps from involvement with secret government operations. The casinos are known for operating as laundering operations for secret government payoffs. Rodney Stitch, in his book Defrauding America, outlined how CIA whistleblowers told him that many judges are paid off through gambling casinos. Paddock's gambling income may well have come through such payoffs. Continuing the InfoWars quote, she points to many questions that remain unanswered about the attack, meaning Coulter, including why Paddock checked into the hotel days earlier than authorities first said he did, why he was wearing gloves if he planned to commit suicide, and why Paddock chose to, quote, unload 200 rounds into the hallway at a security guard who was checking on someone else's room before beginning his massacre, end quote. End of the InfoWars quote. According to the Associated Press, quote, on Monday, Clark County Sheriff Joe Lombardo said security guard Jesus Campos was in a hallway of the Mandalay Bay Hotel, responding to a report of an open door when he heard drilling from Stephen Craig Paddock's room. Paddock, who had installed three cameras to monitor the approach to his suite, opened fire through the door, spraying 200 shots down the hall and wounding the guard who alerted other security officials, Lombardo said. Clark County Sheriff Joe Lombardo had previously said the guard was shot after gunman Stephen Paddock fired at the Country Music Festival, and that the guard's arrival in the hallway of the Mandalay Bay Hotel may have caused Paddock to stop firing. It was not immediately clear why the timeline of the shooting changed a week later and what the impact could be on the investigation. End of the Associated Press quote. Joel says, the latest timeline now says the security guard, Campos, didn't communicate the location of the shooter's room to police until 6 minutes after he had been shot, at which time the mass shooting had already begun. This doesn't make sense, since Campos knew and would have radioed down to hotel security the location of the shooter's room. The hotel confirms that he did, and claims they notified police within 40 seconds. The hotel timeline says two police were on the 31st floor just below the gunman 13 minutes later, but police haven't explained why they took so long to appear on the 32nd floor. Some say they were on the lower floor to clear it of innocent people, but why not stop the shooting instead? This week, another witness emerged. A Mandalay Bay maintenance man, Steve Shuck, has come forward explaining that he went up to check on an open-fire door alarm and got caught in the shooting with Campos. He says he also communicated the shooter's room number and floor to Mandalay Bay security by radio. News reports say 200 shots were fired through the closed door at Campos and down the hall, which seems incredible. The largest magazine Paddock had in the room was a 100-round capacity, so to shoot 200 rounds, he would have had to reload once. The door would have looked like Swiss cheese. Shuck did note a pause in the shooting where he and Campos made a run for it, and then the firing started again, perhaps indicating that the shooter did reload. New evidence also suggests that claimed Las Vegas shooter Stephen Paddock was not alone in the hotel room. Alex Lasker, reporting for AOL News, says, quote, investigators are looking into two key pieces of evidence that seem to suggest that Las Vegas shooter Stephen Paddock was not entirely alone in his Mandalay Bay hotel room. The first is a cell phone charger that does not match any of the devices that belong to the gunman. The second is a hotel record showing that one of Paddock's key cards was used to access his room while his car was outside of the hotel's parking garage. Investigators told NBC News that while there are many possible explanations for these two puzzling finds, they are hoping to get to the bottom of things immediately, end quote. This, combined with the room service receipt for two people, there's a link to that story in the brief, adds to the confirmation that Paddock had an accomplice. While some have hypothesized that the room service receipt could have been for a prostitute visiting the room, the use of the electronic key card in the room while Paddock is out of the hotel indicates another guest, perhaps someone living in the adjoining room with the other broken window that no one in the media is trying to explain. While we can easily understand how the hotel could know when an electronic key card is used, I wonder how they could determine Paddock's car was not in the hotel garage at the time. It seems he often used valet parking, but that is hardly conclusive. Perhaps the hotel has RFID chips in the parking lot pass given to customers. The leaked photos of Paddock's room show a piece of paper visible that some thought might be a suicide note. According to police, it was a paper with calculations on distance and bullet drop heights at various angles of attack. That, to me, is another sign of a setup. Such detailed calculations are hardly necessary when shooting only 350 yards at a downward angle at a huge parking lot. It smacks like planted sniper evidence to add to the single shooter official story. Also, the fact that so few spent casings were found on the floor indicates that Paddock, if not an outright patsy, couldn't have been the only shooter, even if he did fire some rounds to implicate the bump stock claims of authorities. There should have been piles of over 800 empty cartridges on the floor. It was a case of, methinks he protests too much, when Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department Undersheriff Kevin McMahill said Friday, quote, "He was the only shooter. I'm very confident of that," end quote, McMahill said. Quote, "I'm also confident that there were no other people in the room leading up to this event," end quote. McMahill is probably basing this on the fact that after bursting into the room and finding Paddock dead on the floor, police say they didn't find anyone else there. But this is extremely flawed thinking. First of all, they didn't burst into the room until over an hour after the shooting stopped, and they didn't even arrive on the floor until 20 minutes after the shooting. An accomplice or the real shooter could have been long gone by then. According to official police dispatch recordings, at 10:25 to 10:32, almost 20 minutes after the shooting began, the police knew exactly where Paddock was shooting from. Quote, "It's room 135 on the 32nd floor. I need SWAT. We have a four-man element at the very end of the hall," end quote. However, the dispatcher's call for SWAT only yielded one man from a SWAT team. The, quote, "four-man element," end quote, at the end of the hall is an eclectic group of other officers, said CNN. Quote, "An improvised team of Las Vegas police officers, two canine officers, a detective, and a SWAT team member converged on the Mandalay Bay Hotel and Casino on October 1st as Stephen Paddock was firing into a crowd of 22,000 concertgoers. Minutes later, they breached the gunman's hotel room door. It was specialized training that allowed them to act so quickly, Clark County Sheriff Joseph Lombardo told CBS's 60 Minutes. Quote, "I think they prevented 1,000 deaths, and I think it's important for the American public to understand that," end quote, Lombardo said Sunday, end quote. There is no way, Joel says, that after this mass shooting with automatic weapons, the team that breached the door, which was screwed closed to prevent forced entry, is going to be composed of two dog officers, a detective, and a single SWAT team member. It would have been all SWAT team if their intent to stop the shooting was real, just as the dispatcher called for. The only way that SWAT was delayed, and they had almost an hour, is that command authority intervened. They call out SWAT for every little drug bust, and yet no major SWAT team was there for this breach of the door. Officials also continued to be silent about the use of the other room, with the busted-out window adjacent to Paddock's complimentary suite, both as to its use or role in the shooting. Since either room had an unobstructed view of the target area, why break out two windows if there was only one shooter? It's frustrating how police never address the obvious flaws in the official account. Speaking of the broken-out windows, I searched the internet the next day for a daylight video of the exterior of the Mandalay Bay Hotel, to see if there were broken out windows on the middle and lower floor, where muzzle flashes were seen during the shooting. There were none, but there were two windows in that area with darkened window panes, indicating some other type of window material other than the gold-tinted glass everywhere else. Or perhaps they were open to reflect the light differently. In this video, there's a link in the brief, you see the muzzle flashes from a lower hotel window. And in this video, at the minute 24 mark, you can see there are several of the dark panes at around that same location on the hotel. Could there be a special openable window pane there? A window installer who worked on the Mandalay Bay said even the normal panes are capable of being opened in less than a couple of minutes if one knows the system. Even though Paddock was obviously set up to take the entire blame for a multiple shooter operation, I still believe he was involved in some way, due to the number of gun dealers that recognized him as being the purchaser of multiple semi-auto rifles and thousands of rounds of ammo, including an attempt to buy tracers, which have little recreational shooting purposes. NBC reported, quote, "Law enforcement officials briefed on the investigation also said Friday that they had learned Paddock approached an ammunition dealer wanting to buy a large quantity of tracer rounds at a gun show in Phoenix last month. The dealer did not have the quantity Paddock wanted, so Paddock did not end up buying anything from him," they said. The dealer told law enforcement that Paddock was neatly dressed and polite and did not say anything that would raise a red flag. He gave the dealer the impression that he wanted the tracer rounds for recreational use with friends. Law enforcement learned of the encounter because Paddock had an ammunition box bearing the dealer's name. End of the NBC quote. Bill Still, who is a reliable source on the internet, offered these additions to the story. There's a link in the brief. 1. Witnesses saw security guards chasing other security guards. This may have been the security guard in the reflective vest that I, Joel says, mentioned in the video in last Friday's brief, who can be shown drawing a machine pistol and firing at the crowd around Gate 7. 2. The count of the rounds fired in one of the long bursts was 103 rounds, with a three-quarter second delay in between, and another of 72. That's important because the largest capacity magazine found in the room was 100-round magazines, which are incapable, of course, of firing 103-round bursts, let alone another 72, three-quarters of a second later. That means there was another shooter firing on the heels of the first shooter, or someone was using a belt-fed machine gun. 3. All of the bump-stock modified guns, there were two in the room, were jammed. This is actually typical of bump-stock firings, and also an indication that Paddock could not have fired very many rounds. 4th, Bill thinks Paddock was the patsy, and the other accomplice in the room was there to kill him when his role as the patsy was complete. There were also some questionable claims this week. A problematic claim by Alex Jones deserves some discussion. Alex interviewed Trump campaign guy James Brower, who I don't find credible, says Joel, who claims Paddock made an ISIS videotape supposedly pledging allegiance to ISIS. Brower says he knows this from a contact in the White House, but that the White House has no intention of releasing the video, so we just have to take his word for it. Well, I'm not inclined to do so. It sounds like disinformation to me. In fact, he admits that Paddock doesn't mention ISIS, but says Paddock simply says that people must die. Why would they want to hold back this video since everyone is so desperate to find a motive? Another questionable claim is a video by a man covered in tattoos that claims third hand that a friend of Anonymous, the hacker group, said that someone in the Las Vegas Police Department is leaking info that Paddock was an FBI agent involved in running guns to ISIS in the U.S., although I'm fairly certain that Paddock must have some relationship with the deep state that got him involved in this plot, mostly as a patsy, I am reluctant to accept the gun-running or arms merchant claims. The arms merchant theory started after a recent video of his brother Eric, who starts to make a statement that sounds like, "My brother is an arm... dot, dot, dot," but he stops short and says he was about to use a statement derogatory of one of the armed services, so he never does say arms merchant, just arm, which could refer to army or any number of army terms. In fact, it may well be that he was repeating a statement from a previous interview saying his brother was an army of one, similar to an army slogan. You can listen to it at this link in the brief at the 15-minute mark exactly. Arms merchant don't buy retail at gun dealers that leave a trace from background checks. The government black operation Fast and Furious did so only to implicate the gun industry in the plot to lay blame. The only ISIS cells operated in the U.S. are government false flag operations like the Garland, Texas attack on the Pamela Geller anti-Muslim convention. The shooters were being followed by their FBI agent handler, who sped off just as they opened fire. Shots fired at other hotels. Perhaps the most difficult thing to understand about this entire affair is the complete denial of the media that there were other shots fired at other casinos. I can see why the FBI would want to cover up the fact that there were at least two other shooters attacking the crowds at the parking lot festival to promote the lone shooter claim, but how could they think to cover up multiple shootings at other hotels in Las Vegas with hundreds of witnesses? But that seems to be what is happening. In last week's brief, I covered the video of a witness to a shooting at the Bellagio Hotel that broke much of the glass in the entry lobby. Here is another update from that witness. There's a link in the brief. Next, there's ample evidence of additional shootings at other hotels. A young fellow and his girlfriend recount in a video, linked to in the brief, their escape from the festival shooting. They tell of hearing shots coming from the Hooters or MGM Grand Hotel. After fleeing the scene, they were herded into the Tropicana Hotel by a muscular, swarthy-skinned man in a black shirt with short hair, big, muscular, with a briefcase, trying to herd them all into the casino. He says, quote, He looked like he worked there, end quote. But when confronted, the man said he didn't. The person making the video, though in his young 20s, seems very credible and sincere. He talks without pauses, without trying to carefully craft his sentences, and clearly makes his points without contradiction. He confronts the man with several questions, like, "Why can't I go that way?" The guy responds, "No, you need to go into the casino." He asks him, "What's in the suitcase? And why are you telling me to go into the casino, and why can't I go out?" He noted that the big guy was calm, unlike everyone else, in a panic. Then just as the guy is about to open his suitcase and show him what's inside, three bursts of automatic weapons fire open up inside the Tropicana Casino, where he was trying to get them to go. Strangely, rather than flee the shooting like everyone else, he watches this man run into the casino. He correctly concludes this guy must be some type of mercenary or police. Jeff Renz thinks this man was a Mossad agent or someone involved with the mass shooting operations. After fleeing the Tropicana, the witness says he sees shots fired outside the New York or Excalibur casinos, but not inside. Jeff Renz also thinks the Las Vegas gambling establishment, which owns the local press, suppressed all these other shootings in order to protect the city from scaring people away. If so, this has to be a major cover-up because of so many witnesses to shooting in these other casinos. I remember hearing an NBC reporter this week explain why they don't cover these kinds of, quote, rumors, end quotes, meaning of other shooters. Because, quote, "We don't cover anything that can't be confirmed with official sources," end quote. "Really?" Joel asks. "Even if you have eyewitnesses you can interview and verify on your own? We know the media does investigative reporting all the time, outside of police claims, so this is clearly an excuse." More evidence of other shooters. The most interesting technical analysis that came out this past week was by Mike Adams, a.k.a. the Health Ranger, who did some, quote, "forensic acoustical analysis," end quote, of the gunfire to prove that shots were coming from two different distances. Adams has a scientific background and works for a lab, so he does come across as very knowledgeable. Better yet, he takes you step by step through his analysis. He picked up on something I had heard but didn't recognize. As the shooting begins, before any shots are heard, you hear in all the videos at the parking lot a staccato series of ticks, which turn out to be high-pitched sounds of the bullets striking the pavement when they miss people. But before the sound reaches you from the firing, by comparing the difference in time between the impact, the ticking sounds, and the actual sound of the shots, sound travels slower than the bullets, he can prove that some shots come from a shorter distance, 250 yards, than the Mandalay Bay Hotel, which was at 550 to 600 yards.